You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, ma. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, a Kyrie when he make a trade, and nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game is very important, Millie.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics Podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for making this part of your daily routine. We are here for you Monday through Friday. We are the only podcast out there for you Celtics fans Monday through Friday. We're the Rain and Jays, John Corrales, Jay King, so dedicated that he's podcasting from the streets of Boston, not from
Heroic.
Some cushy studio. Yeah.
Heroic.
After being at the Garden for a crappy game, but an awesome retirement ceremony, Jay King has to podcast immediately, leaving the building, walking home. So we're going to do that for you tonight. Let's just start, Jay. Let's just start with the most awesome thing of the night. Paul Pierce back lifting his jersey, his number 34, up to the rafters. That was just an awesome moment.
It was so cool to be in the Garden to experience that. And I think what stood out to me the most was that you know Paul Pierce was with the Boston Celtics for a long time. You realize he was with them for 15 years, that he was the second leading scorer in franchise history, that he won a title, that he made 10 All-Star games, that he had all these accomplishments. But you don't totally comprehend how long he was with the Celtics until you see all of the players that he was teammates with come out, and it's like, oh, there's Antoine Walker, he was in the Antoine years, and there's Walter McCarty, he was in those years, and there's Scal and KG and Rondo, he was in that era too. And it's like he spans so many eras, from Rick Pitino to Jim O'Brien to Doc Rivers, from like Eric Williams to
there are three distinct Paul Pierce eras, and and that's the beauty of everything he's been through. He walked into the Boston Celtics 1 year into the Rick Pitino era. Antoine Walker was already here, and they teamed up for that. 2 years, 2.5 years into his career, Pitino left, and then the Jim O'Brien era started. And it was really, it should have been kind of like a visionary era, because Jim O'Brien was all about launching threes, which is kind of fitting into what today's NBA is. But he had that era in the Antoine Walker, I shoot threes because there are no fours era. And then Doc Rivers came in, and it was a different chapter. And this is, I'll plug, shamelessly plug my Paul Pierce tribute on RedsArmy.com. I wrote it as if it was a dramatic character development, and I feel like that captures Paul Pierce's time in Boston the best, because the conflict, the drama, the tragedy, the reconciliation, all of that stuff is just so perfectly Paul Pierce. For him to come in during that Pitino years and come in and the stabbing and the transition to the Jim O'Brien years, and then the reconciliation with Doc Rivers after that crazy Pacers series where he really hit rock bottom, I think, in his Celtics career, and then to buy into Doc Rivers, and then to have that Garnett, Ray Allen, new big three era, and to get that full redemption, winning the title and winning finals MVP. It's just such a perfect story arc. And to have him there tonight and acknowledging everybody from all of those eras, it's just beautiful. This Paul Pierce night captured so many different things about the Celtics and so many different eras. and just really captured the essence of Pierce going through all of the crap and coming through on the other side as a Celtics legend. It really was just beautiful to see this finish to his Boston Celtics career.
If there's one thing Boston does right, it's celebrating athletic legends. Like, the Celtics are unbelievable at giving tribute. The Isaiah weird thing notwithstanding, the Celtics are unbelievable at giving perfect tributes, whether it's when KG and Pierce came back or when they had Rondo back. It's always, always, always a touching emotional experience. And I thought the way he approached his speech was cool. And he started off by saying, you know, I was thinking, I looked up at those rafters and I thought, what made me get there? And he kind of went back through and kind of discussed everything that helped him get to the point where he was able to reach the legendary status with the Celtics. And he went through his mom and he talked about a police officer from his hometown who was just nice to everyone and used to give him haircuts when he couldn't afford them. And he talked about the best friend who pushed him at 6 a.m. And it's like, it was cool that he looked at it that way and decided to give his speech, like literally going back through his life and mentioning all the people who helped him get to the point where he was, kind of through the lens of the journey of how he got to literally the position he was standing in at the moment at center court at TD Garden, waiting for his jersey to get raised to the Raptors. I thought it was really, really awesome that the Celtics named the Players Tunnel after him. That was a cool touch.
That's fantastic.
And then Eddie Palladino bringing back the old Paul Pierce intro for one last time. And then he comes through. And it was perfect.
Yeah.
They couldn't have scripted it any better. They couldn't have done it any better. They had the narration by Tommy Heinsohn that apparently Sean Grandy wrote. And it was fantastic. And they had messages from God knows how many people. And they had Doc Rivers, KG, and Rondo sitting next to each other. So it was just like kind of just bouncing from one point to the next of everything that helped Pierce get to the point where he was. And and obviously the Boston was just madness. Well, I walked through today to get to the Garden, and it was just everybody wearing Pierce jerseys everywhere. Everyone just wanted to celebrate Paul Pierce.
Yeah, yeah. And to me, the best part, I guess I shouldn't say the best part, but a great part. It's hard to say the best part, but a great part of what was singled out tonight, it shows how, I guess, nuanced everything is in Boston and how, I want to say this the right way because I don't want to get like plastered all over Twitter when other fan bases catch this, but the things that Boston celebrates.
I kind of want you to get plastered all over Twitter.
So, all right, fine. Fuck it. I'll say it. The things that Boston celebrates are just smarter than a lot of other things. Like, everybody, there's a lot of Paul Pierce slander going on social media right now. And this is where they just don't get it. The things that were pointed out tonight, the one play that was pointed out tonight was a goddamn jump ball. A jump ball that no one on any other team anywhere else would celebrate a jump ball. But you know what? Paul Pierce in the conference semifinals, as girls just walk up to you, I guess.
I was actually just walking by them on the
street. Let's just pretend.
No girls walk up to me.
Let's just pretend that they saw Jay King podcasting and they said, we want to be part of it. Back to my point that Paul Pierce in the Eastern Conference semifinals in a Game 7 duel with LeBron James, of all the things that we could celebrate in that amazing duel with LeBron, it was a jump ball and how he anticipated where Zydrunas Ilgauskas would tip it and how he boxed out LeBron at the right time and got his hand on the tip and got the loose ball, and the Celtics called timeout to seal that win. The fact that that was celebrated tells me so much about this franchise and the types of things that we appreciate in Boston. That just was amazing to me. I love that they singled out that play. It was an awesome play. And on a night where he had this incredible offensive explosion, that was the thing that everybody looked at, was, it says a lot about Pierce, the franchise, Doc, Danny, the whole thing.
Yeah, I think you're right that it is smart to point out that play. And obviously it was a monster play. And it could have been an overlooked play with 1 minute left in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference semifinals. They're up 3. He has 41 points in the game. He does all these things. He hits all these huge shots. LeBron has 45. Pierce kind of out-duels him. It was really the seminal moment of his career. And I think it might not be that Boston is smarter than anyone else. I think it's just that Danny Ainge and Doc Rivers recognized the winning play at that moment. And maybe Boston does have more appreciation as a city than a lot of people
buy
do
in, for Jay
plays
King.
Like that.
Buy in. Buy into this. Dive into it.
I'm just saying I hope you get skewered on social media.
I should.
I'm here
for it. I'm ready. And I said it specifically like this because of all the Paul Pierce slander. And I know that I'm embellishing a tiny bit, but I'm embellishing because the slander that I've seen about Paul Pierce on social media was so obnoxious that I have to respond in kind. I can't just let that slide. I can't let people sit
what
there.
What slander did you see?
Oh, my God. People calling Pierce mediocre. People calling the Celtics mediocre for appreciating that Paul Pierce is an all-time franchise great. People in the middle of the ceremony saying, is this still going on? Like, all of that stuff from other fan bases, just, it was bothersome to me. Like, why do you care? And I'll tell you why they care, because Boston is the pinnacle. Boston is at the top. And if you didn't care about all of this, then you wouldn't have said anything. But the fact that they're watching and they're saying something tells them that this is what they aspire to. This is what other franchises, other fan bases aspire to be this, to have a Paul Pierce retiring his number. So I'm throwing down the gauntlet. I'm laying down the glove. You want to come at me?
Yeah, I might come at you. You sound kind of obnoxious right now, bro.
Yeah, I'm pouring it on. I really am pouring it on, especially thick.
But obviously the slander is just misguided.
Yeah, I know.
Totally misguided.
In reality, this was a beautiful night, and Paul Pierce was very deserving. But yeah.
Yeah, what I was just going to say, when you think back to that 08 run, you know, they had a tough time of it in the playoffs a little bit. The Hawks series went 7 games when nobody expected it to. That Cleveland series, like, Paul Pierce had a dual LeBron aim in a game 7. Then the next series, they play Detroit, and they had to take down a Pistons team that had won the 04 title and was always a factor after that. Then in the finals, he was a finals MVP against Kobe Bryant and the Los Angeles Lakers, outplaying everyone on the court in that series. So, I mean, it's totally misguided to say he was mediocre or anything like that. I think, if anything, he was underrated. The things that he did, the ways that he scored, he was underappreciated because he never had enough talent around him.
Absolutely.
He dragged Anthony, Eric Williams, and Tony Bucci in Eastern Conference. As soon as he got a couple guys around, that was an instant. So, if anything, he was underrated. He was always an all-around player. And the thing about Paul Pierce, just the complete nature of his game.
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't take away one thing because he could just turn to the next. And this was just a cool ceremony. I love that KG came in Did you see Ray Allen Instagrammed a photo of him on the golf course today?
Oh my God. Like, seriously? Like, that's, I saw that. I did see that. Like, why can't we put this behind us? Why can't we just put this behind us? It was just, that's, I guess this just completes the whole petty war. Like, it's never going to get reconciled. It's just never going to get reconciled.
I don't know if that was meant to be petty wars, but it looks bad. It looks bad when Paul Pierce went out.
He knows what day this is. He has to know what day this is.
Yeah, and Paul Pierce went out of his way to kind of mend that relationship, which, honestly, Paul Pierce and KG and Rondo and Perkins, those guys, like, they've held a grudge for a long time. But, yeah, Ray Allen goes out and goes on Instagram, and granted, someone in his foursome had a hole-in-one, which is a rare occasion he wanted to note. But come on, man, just one Please. Time. He knew what was going to happen if he Instagrammed himself golfing on the day of Paul Pierce's jersey retirement. And who knows if the Celtics really wanted him there. I don't think that, like, he was totally welcome, even though Pierce has said he has reached out and wants him to be a part of things again. Like, it's obvious. There's some bad blood there. So, but I do think if he had shown up, everything would have been erased in 2 seconds. Like,
right. If Ray Allen was there, it would have been over. That would have been it. It would have been over.
Yeah. He would have showed up. The TD Garden would have played Ray Allen blowing by Sasha Vujacic on the Jumbotron.
Yep.
And everything would have been done. It would have evaporated. All the drama of the last 6 years or however long it's been would have been gone. Instead, Ray's out on the golf course Instagramming.
Yep. Sad. So sad. Okay. Let's also sad was today's game. And we have to talk about today's game.
And we're going to blow through it. We're going to get right back to Paul Pierce stuff. We promise.
Yeah. Let's just get this out of the way. Today, I felt as frustrated as I've ever been. And I really haven't been frustrated by the Celtics at all this season until today, when I couldn't believe that they were just so inactive. Like, they were very isolation. There was not a lot of ball movement. It was just a lot of taking their man off the dribble. They didn't move the ball from side to side. They didn't get the ball into the paint. They didn't rotate much. On defense, they way overreacted to LeBron James. They didn't know how to play the pick and roll for some reason. They were way late on closeouts, and they let the Cavaliers just dominate. They let LeBron dominate. And I know it's LeBron, but you got to take something away from him. They let him be a scorer. They let him be a passer. They let him be everything. They didn't take anything away from him at all. And they let the most frustrating part to me was they let the Cavaliers off the hook. This was their first game together as this particular team, and they didn't challenge them at all. They didn't challenge that cohesiveness. They didn't challenge their communication. This was an opportunity to really let the ball movement fly, swing it around the perimeter, get the ball into the paint, cut back door, simple basketball, let them just put the Cavs in rotation and see if they could communicate and react. They never put the Cavaliers in that position, and they let, really, the new acquisitions are athletic guys. Some of them are decent defenders, and they just kind of let those guys defend one-on-one without really challenging any of the communication. And they let a golden opportunity slip away to put that to the test, and they ended up getting blown out because of it.
Yeah, the Celtics, they've been playing like trash for a while now. You know, they got blown out. They got blown out in Toronto. They should have lost to the Washington Wizards without John Wall. They're a Markieff Morris foul away from falling to the Wizards with Thomas Satoransky starting at point guard. They got absolutely smacked by the Cavs today. I think it all started, honestly, it's hard to single out one guy, but I'm going to right now because he was trash. Greg Monroe came in, and Greg Monroe had a miserable stretch of like 3 minutes. It was just 3 minutes, and he got wrecked by LeBron James with the pick and roll. He got wrecked when he switched on to LeBron James, which should never, ever happen. The Celtics never should have allowed that. I can almost promise you Brad Stevens did not want that to happen. And then he let someone go backdoor and threw away a turnover. And before you knew it, the Celtics were just giving up dunk after dunk, and they kind of never recovered. And so I think this type of performance has been coming for a while. Like, they've been down 26 points in each of their last two games. That follows a game where they should have lost to Washington, which was right after a game where they got trounced by the Toronto Raptors. So they really haven't been playing well lately. I don't know whether it's because they missed Marcus Smart and his energy. The offense has just been so bad. They don't pass the ball. They're isolating. They're not patient. They're not attacking. They're not putting defenses on their heels. And it's just been gross, gross offense. They had 7 turnovers in the second quarter. They let Cleveland just get really, really comfortable. And once Cleveland got comfortable, all the newcomers had big games. Clarkson, George Hill, Rodney Hood, all those guys. They all looked good in their debuts. It was just an ugly, ugly performance for Boston. What did you think of your first glimpse at Cleveland's new acquisitions?
Look, it was hard for me to say they weren't great because the Celtics let them be great. I saw George Hill play very good defense. It looks like he was trying. My favorite tweet of the night was from Ryan Bernadoni at Danger Cart, who said, he said, my watching George Hill tonight made me believe that he was stealing from the Sacramento Kings. It's a totally different player for the Cavaliers. Jordan Clarkson was amazing. Even Jeff Green was a good player. But
don't be fooled by that one.
I know. But look, all of their new acquisitions did well. And my impression basically is LeBron plus decent players who try hard is better than LeBron plus decent players who don't try hard, or less than decent players, I guess. And it's not like Dwayne Wade and Derrick Rose are decent players. But LeBron plus these guys. And your tweet was great the other day, basically saying if another team that didn't have LeBron traded for Jordan Clarkson, George Hill, Rodney Hood, and Larry Nance Jr. to save their season, I'd laugh at them. Like, that was perfect. Like, that's laughable that those four guys are brought in to save your season. But you add them to LeBron James, and all of a sudden you're dropping 121 points on what's allegedly the best defense in the NBA. But I think part of what made those guys all go crazy is the fact that the Celtics didn't play the type of defense that they were supposed to be playing. There were a lot of times that they played a pick and roll. LeBron played pick and roll with somebody, it didn't matter who, and people overreacted to LeBron, and that meant that a third guy had to come in to help. And when you have three guys defending two people on a pick and roll play, that leaves somebody wide the hell open. And that happened multiple times in the third quarter. And those ended up being threes. Threes for Jordan Clarkson, threes for George Hill, threes for Rodney Hood. I mean, that really was the killer in this game. The fact that the Celtics were just lazy on the pick and roll defense, and couldn't stop that. Instead of just switching and taking something away, I don't care if LeBron scores 50 on you. Let LeBron score 50. I don't care. Hold the other guys to less than 50. You're fine. But they overreacted to LeBron, and he became a passer, and he had 10 assists on the night. So nearly a triple-double, and that's what happens. When LeBron has 10 assists, you're going to get screwed. You're done. You're screwed. You're done. You're fucked. You're going to lose. So that... My impression of the new guys was that LeBron made them great. The Celtics let LeBron make them great.
Yeah, and I thought my general thinking on the new guys is they're upgrades from the garbage that Ty Lue was playing before. You know, he was playing Dwayne Wade. He was playing Derrick Rose. He was playing those guys legitimate minutes, and they have been terrible. Those guys have been bad. Both ends of the court, they've been harmful. Isaiah Thomas, as unbelievable as he was in Boston last season, he was fantastic. He was, like, he finished fifth in MVP voting. I can't say enough about what Isaiah Thomas did last year. This year in Cleveland, he was not helpful at all. He walked in there. He was taking a lot of shots. He wasn't making them. He's not moving well on the hip. He's never been a good defender. So he was harmful. So they got rid of a lot of players that were not helping them. And they got pretty good guys. Like, I honestly, if you get into a final series and you've got George Hill and Ronnie Hood and Jordan Clarkson guarding Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, you're probably in a whole lot of trouble. But I think what this roster did is it puts more on LeBron's plate. Like, they don't have that Kyrie. They don't have that the theory of Isaiah that they wanted to begin this season. Now it's basically LeBron is tasked to create so much, and all these other guys are just role pieces around him. And it's kind of like they're going back to what helped them win the East in 2016, or was it 2015 when Kyrie got hurt and Kevin Love was hurt in the playoffs, and they went into Golden State and they won a game or maybe even two with LeBron just doing everything next to like Dellavedova and Tristan Thompson and Timofey Mozgov, and they've kind of gone back to that, but with like maybe better players. I don't think the guys that they got were good. I just think they were so desperate, and the guys that they're replacing are so bad that they'll be better now. And I think they might have salvaged their hopes of getting to the NBA Finals. I don't know if they were start. I was starting. Faith in LeBron and the Cavs, like the power of LeBron that he could drag his team. But then you see him today and you're like, okay, the Cavs might again be a problem in the East. They clearly weren't having any amount of fun with the group they had before. And today, game one, they had their spirit back a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I said before, like on the trade deadline day, I said the guys that they got are going to at least try, which is a big upgrade from what they had before. And that's sad that they got guys that are going to at least try, and that's big. That's pretty pathetic, but that's the case. And the guys that they got are actually decent defenders, as opposed to the guys that they had who were all very, very negative defenders. So it individually, when you say you got these guys and you hope these guys are going to turn around your season, that sounds sad. But on the Cavaliers with LeBron, it makes a difference. And that's going to be a big deal. Like, LeBron with those guys is going to be a tough out. It's going to be a tough out to get those Cleveland guys out in the playoffs. So I'm upset that the Celtics have gotten away from some of the things that made them successful. I feel like I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just one of those January/February lulls where they get into the All-Star break and they just need a rest or something, a reset. Whatever it is, they need to come back out of the All-Star break and start playing like they were playing before. I need to see these guys move the ball, like I said, from side to side, paint touches, and get opposing defenses in rotation. When that happens, then everybody benefits. The Al Horford starts hitting shots. Jason Tatum starts hitting shots. Jaylen Brown starts hitting shots. Kyrie's going to get his. That's fine. But it's all the other guys that need to get some open looks and not just rely on their individual games. And I feel like the past week we've seen a lot of people getting onto their individual games and trying to outshine everybody individually to score points. It's not going to work. Okay.
Yeah, and I think Brad too is still experimenting with things with Monroe. Like, he started Marcus Morris. He brought all three centers off the bench. Like, Baines looked a little frustrated when he came off after playing only like 3 minutes in one stint. Tice was just playing a little while at a time. Monroe was playing in two big lineups that, like, Stevens has never liked to play two big lineups. He's usually started two big lineups and then try to get away from it as quickly as possible and stay away from it, especially during closing stretches. So the Monroe signing kind of makes the Celtics a little weird and a little different than they've typically been under Stevens, or the way Stevens has typically wanted them to be under him. So I'm interested to see how they kind of fit in Monroe moving forward and how they try to make it work, because Baines and Tice have both been good and they've both been helpful and they've both been defenders. And then you have Monroe, and he's a different type of player, and he needs to play center just like those guys do, I think, when the Celtics are at their best. So there just aren't a lot of minutes for those guys. And then you saw in the first unit, you know, you play Marcus Morris and Al Horford at power forward and center, and they had a lot of problems on the offensive glass. Tristan Thompson was hurting them a little bit. So they got some things to figure out rotation-wise now with Greg Monroe.
They do. They definitely do. And I'm excited. I really am excited for the Greg Monroe experiment, because I think he can be very good. I think his passing is going to be an element that is not entirely expected, but I think if they do it right, he can be a very impactful guy, and I think his passing is going to be part of why the Celtics kind of turn this around from, you know, their bench units production, if they can do it right, if they can figure out the right lineups. But I definitely believe in Monroe's passing as much as anything. Let's just move past this game. It might just be a case of a pre-All-Star break doldrum. Let's just finish this off with Paul Pierce night. Let's go back to the positive. Let's end on a good note. Paul Pierce is the first number retired since Cedric Maxwell, which, by the way, I have thoroughly enjoyed Paul Pierce busting Maxwell's balls.
Yeah. That has been one of my favorite parts of the entire process. Him just taking shots at Max whenever he can.
Every chance he got. It's been great. And Maxwell deserves his number to be raised. He's a playoff hero. He was a bridge between Havlicek and Bird. And he was a finals MVP. He won two titles in Boston. He deserves his number to be retired. But for Paul Pierce to say, hey, once Maxwell's numbers went up, I knew I had a chance, it's just hilarious.
And yeah. And they're good friends. Like, he is just literally
right,
busting
exactly.
his friend's balls.
Totally busting his balls. Totally busting his balls. It's great. It's hilarious to hear it. I don't know if there's like a sense of relief, but I think between tonight's number retirement ceremony and last night's, by the time you guys hear it, it's two nights ago, but the Saturday night function that the Celtics had, where many of the current retired number legends were around to kind of welcome Paul Pierce into the fraternity. I just think it was just a very nice kind of welcoming Paul Pierce. Like, it just kind of allowed Pierce, I think, to enjoy this moment and to kind of feel like he was part of something big.
Yeah, which he was. I thought it was cool. Robert Parrish never comes to any Celtics events. Like, I don't ever remember seeing him around at the Garden for anything. And so him coming back meant a lot. And obviously he thinks very highly of Pierce. he called Pierce the best offensive player in Celtics history, which was a little wild. Like, come on, guys. Larry Bird. Larry freaking Bird, guy. Yeah. As great as Paul Pierce was, Larry Bird was a three-time MVP. He won it three straight years. Like, let's not forget what Larry Bird did.
Right. But this is not different from what Tommy Heinsohn said. And I think what Tommy and Parrish are referring to is, and I'm just giving them the benefit of the doubt here, that Pierce was just much more athletic than Larry. And not that he was a better player than Larry Bird, but on an offensive side, I think he just had more tools in the toolkit than Larry Bird. Pierce was undoubtedly better off the dribble than Larry Bird. Like, he had a better first step, and that allowed him more options offensively. And I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt here on Paul Pierce night. I know Larry Bird is the god. If you and I are picking two sides of an all-time Celtics team, Larry Bird is either going first or second. It's a matter of, do you want Larry or do you want Bill Russell? And then the other guy is going to take whoever wasn't picked. We know that Paul Pierce isn't getting picked any sooner than third. But I understand that what they're saying is that Pierce's offensive arsenal definitely was more varied than Bird's. He was better off the dribble. He could drive, all that stuff. And like I said, Tommy had spent years saying Pierce was the best offensive player in Celtics history. Not the best player, but best offensive player. Whatever. I'm just gonna give them the benefit of the doubt. I'm not gonna debate it. We know where Larry Bird sits in the entire franchise history.
The most hilarious part of the entire ceremony was when Danny Ainge went out of his way to let the ladies in the house know that
Mike Zarin
is the most eligible bachelor in Boston.
How about Mike Zarin tweeting out the "I hate Danny Ainge" T-shirt?
Yeah,
that
was a perfect response. So
beautiful.
So for a little context, there, Mike Zarin is the last guy on earth who would want the attention on him in that way. There are some guys, some single guys, I'm sure, who, and some assistant GMs in other places, I'm sure, would love to have ladies informed that they're an eligible bachelor and that they're single. And they probably would, like, open up their DMs to get the barrage of messages. But Mike Zarin is the very last person on earth who wants attention in that way. And so Ainge doing that, Ainge knew exactly what he was doing. He knew exactly how squeamish he was going to make Mike Zarin. And that was just hilarious. An inside joke that played out in front of 20,000 people inside TD Garden, that played out in front of however many people watched it on TV. And it was, and the whole TD Garden, the buzz was unbelievable throughout the night. The whole Paul Pierce jersey retirement, it was electric. It was special. It was really magnificent. But that moment, that was the one time people got quiet, was when they were like, I don't know about this line, Ainge.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah.
That was so funny.
That was lovely.
Well, I think, really honestly, once the Pierce ceremony was underway, I had pretty much forgotten about the game. And I had to dredge those memories up to talk about it for the podcast. But I really honestly didn't care as much, because the Pierce night trumped everything. It was really the most important thing that happened. The game was secondary at the end.
The game wasn't even secondary. The game was not even a thought at the end.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad that a lot of the guys were able to, they came out and sat on the bench and watched this. I think that's important. I think it's important for guys to see how Boston treats its legends. And this is why I like how Boston gives guys tributes. I like how Kevin Garnett was treated on his way back. I like how Rondo was treated on his way back. Perk, everybody. Like, all of those guys, when they returned, when they got those tributes, and we made a lot of shit about Isaiah Thomas. And Isaiah Thomas, thankfully, it wasn't a big deal because, unfortunately, he ended up getting traded to the Lakers. We can discuss that another time. But he's going to get a tribute too. And I think it's important for guys to see how Boston treats its former players, guys who have contributed, because that glory, that recognition is an important part of a player's decision-making process. It's important to a player when he thinks about, if I do something good, they want recognition. They want that. Obviously, they want money and they want championships. They want recognition too. So I think guys coming out and seeing what this whole pageantry was about, that was important as well. But really, it was all about recognizing a very important player in Celtics history and a unique player in Celtics history, and a guy whose journey to the top was not like many other legends. Like, he didn't have a perfect journey to the top. He had a very flawed up and down journey where he was almost traded twice and he won a title and then he still didn't finish his career with Boston. But all of it just kind of weaved together in this kind of wild, poetic way to make sense. And I think tonight was it's just a very nice, fitting tribute to a guy who deserved every bit of adulation that he got.
Yeah, and like you said, people talk a lot about how Paul Pierce had his journey. And I think what made his journey special wasn't just that he rose, but it was like he brought – it wasn't a linear climb. It was like he brought them to the Eastern Conference Finals. He saw the rest of his team torn down. They were garbage, and then he teamed with Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen and sacrificed and got to the title and won a championship, and then had like this second surge where he might have thought he was never going to have that in Boston. I'm sure he thought he was never going to have that in Boston because Danny Ainge was trading away everybody. They won 24 games in a season. He must have thought, the end is coming for me here. I will never win a title with this group. And then 5 months later, he has Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen, and they go on just a special journey. What was your favorite Paul Pierce moment from his career?
My favorite Paul Pierce moment. You know, I this sounds hokey, but that moment with him raising the finals MVP over his head was just, to me, the perfect culmination of everything. Even that moment of him on the table that was unstable, that required like three or four people to hold it without him to prevent him from falling, because it was just a rickety old card table, it seemed like. That felt very perfect to me. It was the culmination of a lot of ups and downs. That was the culmination of Paul Pierce becoming a legend. And yet it was still, it's almost poetic that it was still on unstable ground, that he was standing on this table that wasn't stable, yet he was still being showered with this adulation as a new Celtics legend. It just felt poetically perfect to me. That to me was my favorite moment because of everything it captured, and because at that moment he became a thing that through 10 years at that point of his career, so few people expected him to be. That he was this kid from Inglewood that was drafted to a team that he hated and had these ups and downs. He had this horrible time with Team USA, and they lost the World Championships in 02. And he had that 05 meltdown in Indy, again in Indiana, where he got ejected and he had that stupid moment with the bandage around his head. And he still came back from all of that. And he had this moment after so many people wanted him out, that that particular moment with him and the finals trophy over his head, it just, that to me just encapsulated so much. That one thing, when you say a picture paints a thousand words, like that was the thousand words. It was perfect. That just to me was just so perfect.
Yeah, to me it was the play after the one that the super intelligent, supremely intelligent city of Boston has deemed Paul Pierce's finest moment.
The jump ball.
So he had two free throws, or he hit one free throw right after, and it bounced on the rim and jumped in the air, and it put the Celtics up four. And there was a moment when it went in, and he just had the biggest smile on his face, and you could just kind of see the sense of relief and joy, and the fact that he was appreciating the journey and appreciating the fact that he was on his way. He didn't know it yet at the time, of course, to another title, and that he was going to get a chance to move on to the Eastern Conference Finals and maybe the finals, and that he was playing with a team that finally had a real chance. And it was really a fortuitous bounce, and he just smiled and smiled, and you could see him just losing himself in the moment and allowing himself to enjoy the moment. And that was my favorite. And then the other one, probably like the early series against the Sixers, when he went against Allen Iverson. And you didn't realize yet how good Paul Pierce was. Like, you'd seen Paul Pierce do a lot of impressive things. You'd seen him score a lot of points. You'd seen him, you know, almost win Rookie of the Year. You'd seen a lot of things out of him. And then he started doing it in the playoffs against Iverson and kind of going toe-to-toe against Iverson, who at the time was like the MVP. I don't know if that was his MVP year or what. It was around the MVP years when Iverson was scoring 30-plus points a game. And Pierce was having duels with him. And it was just like, okay, Pierce is a bad, bad man of the highest order. He can compete with anybody. He can put up points with anybody. And as a young Celtics fan, that was kind of the moment when you realized that you could be watching someone who wasn't just like a good player, but who could become a special player. I think that was the beginning of the realization for me that Paul Pierce could kind of extend above the rest of the players that I'd seen. It really in my life, my whole life. Like, I was born in 1987. So I missed most of the Bird years. By the time I became a Celtics fan, they were hot garbage, like the early, early garbage years. Antoine was my guy. I used to do the shimmy when I was little. Like, I used to be out there doing the walk and wiggle. And then Paul Pierce came along, and Paul Pierce was the one. He was the one for an entire generation. He is the generation's greatest Celtic. He's the guy everybody of my generation looks to as their favorite player. Like, It was special to be in the TD Garden today. There aren't many times that I sit there and kind of have to pinch myself, and today was one of those times. It was like looking at him pulling his number up to the rafters and staring up at it. It was kind of like, wow, I'm a lucky guy to have my job and to be able to watch this right now.
Yep, beautiful night. This beautiful night. This is perfect. And honestly, I don't give a damn what any other fan base or anybody else says. Tonight was a perfect night for Paul Pierce.
Everybody go at Corrales at Reds Army _John.
That's right. Come at me, bro. Come at me. Now, you got no legs to stand on. You got no legs to stand on. Paul Pierce is a legend. He's a Celtics legend. And there's just no doubt about that. And I don't care. I don't care what team you root for. Like, how can you deny that Paul Pierce is a Celtics legend? How can you deny that the second leading scorer in team history shouldn't get his number retired? You know? Screw you if you want to say no. Get out of here, man. That's terrible.
Terrible.
We'll leave it at that. It's terrible. That's terrible. We'll leave it at that. I want to thank everybody for listening. This has been a wild night, but a fun night in a lot of ways. And so the game didn't go as we hoped, but hopefully that changes. We're upon the All-Star break, and we'll hope for some better play when we come out on the other side. If you are a subscriber, I hope you leave us a good rating and rate us 5 stars. If you are not a subscriber, go ahead and search for Locked On Celtics wherever you find all of your other podcasts. We are the only Monday through Friday Boston Celtics podcast. We are the best Boston Celtics podcast on the damn planet. If there was a number retirement ceremony for podcasts, ours would be up there already, damn it. We're the Rain and Jays. We hope you enjoyed this show, and we hope to hear you. We hope to have you back for the next show. Here we are, the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.